Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast. Welcome to Episode 3 of the Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast, where we explore early speculative fiction that shaped the science fiction genre. Today we journey into the imaginative world of Australia Advanced, or Dialogues for the Year 2032, written in 1832. This visionary piece transports us to a future Australia bustling with technological advancement and social progress. In this dialogue, we witness a transformation of New South Wales into a vibrant centre of industry and trade, complete with double railways and innovative manufactories. As our characters discuss coal mining operations, global trade dynamics, and advanced military defences, they paint a picture of a nation poised at the forefront of economic and technological development. Enjoy this fascinating portrayal of Australia's potential future, exploring themes of urbanisation, transportation and...
Australia. Advanced or Dialogues for the Year 2032 Inches by Mephistophel the Younger. Dialogue 3. Scene. The parlour of traveller in the Australian Private Hotel, George's Place, Bourke Square. Time, 1:00 p.m, lunch on the table, Australian. Well, sir, and how have you employed your leisure hours during the last 2 or 3 days? Pleasantly, I hope. Traveller. Very satisfactorily, I assure you. I have both seen and heard a good deal of the internal economy of New South Wales since I last had the pleasure of seeing you. Eh, I am glad of it. Did you find my letter of any use to you at Stephen's Town? T. Of much use every way. I found the director of the Australian Company a very pleasant and extremely well-informed man. His villa is beautifully situated, and the grounds tastefully laid out. It occupied me nearly the whole day going through the various manufactories, mills, bleach fields, and what not. It is an immense establishment, and their stud of horses are fully equal to those of England. Was not Barry, the famous polar navigator, director of this company in the early days of the colony? Eh, you mean Parry, I presume. T. Parry, was it? I dare say you are right. Eh, he was director, but it is now a long while ago. I recollect reading in the company's general reports that Parry was the first English knight that settled on these shores. Did they show you their coal works? T. Yes, they did, and a busy sight it is. Port Stephens is quite a bustling seaport. I observed 8 or 10 vessels loading with the Black Diamond for Van Diemen's Land, and twice that number of coasters belonging to Sydney, waiting their turn. And although there are 3 double railways, there was apparently enough to do for them all. A. The autumnal months are drawing on. Consequently, the people of Sydney are laying in their winter stock. An immense quantity of coal is lodged in the depots about this time. T. Is not the vein of coal at Port Stephens superior to that of Newcastle? A. I believe it is. Some people prefer a mixture of both. T. By the way, the maize stores at Stephens Town surprised me not a little. Such immense granaries of the golden grain. They were actively employed measuring the 20,000 bushels which goes home with us in the Rapid. Eh, 20,000 bushels? You surprise me. T. It is a fact, nevertheless. A. It is somewhat singular that the maize market was not at all affected yesterday morning by such a purchase. T. For the best of all reasons, it is as yet a profound secret. A. It will not be a secret next week. Of that I am positive. T. Perhaps not. What is maize selling at just now? A. 16 shillings per quarter. Our last crop was superabundant. Such a crop has not been known for many years. Who are the London purchasers? T. Williams and Company, the government contractors. A. And have you any idea what they are to pay for it in London? T. I believe it is contracted for at 60 shillings per quarter, but from that sum there must be deducted 6 shillings freight, and the duty, which I think is 5%. A. What is the cause of government making this purchase of maize? T. The partial failure of the oat crop. A. What steamer did you take to Port Stephens? T. The company's packet Nora. By the way, in returning I observed a very handsome fort on the South Head. A. Fort Frederick, named after the late King. It was built at the time of the rumoured hostilities between America and England, and I dare say you will rejoice with me that we have not yet had occasion to point the guns of Fort Frederick against the wooden walls of Brother Jonathan. T. And I trust you never shall. The power, both naval and military, of both countries is immense, and were they ever to be again thrown into collision with each other, the struggle would be long, arduous, and bloody. Of course I say that Great Britain in the end would come off victorious, but may a merciful providence avert the consummation. A. Amen to your prayer. T. What ships of war hear you here just now? I observe two at anchor outside the beacon. A. These are the Sirius and the Lyre, both 50-gun frigates. The Snake, 36 guns, and a model of her kind. You will not have an opportunity of seeing, as she is at present stationed off Moreton. The Snake was built at Portsmouth expressly for our east coast. T. I think government would do the state service were they to grant you a few £1,000 for the erection of a new lighthouse. When I saw it the other day, a pretty stiff breeze was blowing from the eastward, and, upon my word, I was very glad to get my body free of it, as it quivered again when the breeze freshened, and, moreover, there is a rent from top to bottom on the east side. You will have it going overboard these tremendous cliffs during some westerly gale. A. The building was struck by lightning 2 or 3 years ago. T. Had it not the patent conductor? A. It had. But the summer was more than usually dry, which caused one of the wooden sockets to fall out of the supporter, and during a thunderstorm it was struck and sustained the damage you noticed. T. I wonder the member for Sydney, the great merchant, what's his name, does not bring it forward in the House of Commons. A. You allude to Mr. Wellmore. T. The same. A. Why, the fact is that Mr. W. was returned by the most numerous but least influential part of the community, and as he is directly opposed to the small number who wish a new lighthouse, he treats it rather lightly than otherwise. No pun meant. T. But surely a thing of this kind must be for the general good. A. Of course it must. And it is a pity that difference of opinion, on political matters, should ever interfere with the welfare of any community. T. Such has always been the case, however. A. I have seen a plan of a new lighthouse, which is intended to be erected to the northward of the present one, and if Parliament do not give the grant this session, I believe it will be built by public subscription, for we have plenty of wealthy men both able and willing to commence it. T. The present South Head Lighthouse must be a very old building. A. I forget the year that it was built, but it must be somewhere about 230 years ago. It was erected during Governor Macquarie's administration, whose monument I showed you in the new town. T. I observe that all the ship signals are made from the centre tower in Fort Frederick. A. Yes, a seaman or two are kept in the fort for that purpose. It is in contemplation, I have been told, to convert the old lighthouse into a signal station to communicate with the stations on the north and south shores. Of course, before this can be done, the new one must be built and the old one repaired. T. I was much pleased with the South Head Drive. If you keep your eye to the road, and allow it not to wander through the trees either to the blue waters of Botany Bay or the harbour of Port Jackson, you might fancy yourself in one of those beautiful rural drives in the neighbourhood of London. A. Some of the villas are very handsome. T. I was particularly pleased with Tusculum, the sweet residence of your friend B. It is quite a bijou. I am astonished he has not got married long ere this. It only wants an agreeable woman to complete a very pleasant picture. A. Domus et placens uxor. T. Exactly. Or, as one of our antiquated poets said or sung 2 or 3 centuries ago, without the smile from partial beauty won, what were this world a world without a sun? A. Did you look in at the distilleries as you were going or returning? You would pass the gate, at all events. T. A large gateway with the words Australian Distillery in huge cast-iron letters. A. That is the place. There is a neat lodge, too, on the left-hand side, covered with the monthly rose. T. Oh, one cannot possibly pass it without remark. But we went not in. A. If you had, you would have tasted as fine aquas was ever distilled in any part of the Three Kingdoms. T. What? As fine as the Glenlivet, of which the Scotch people are so proud, and the English people so fond of? A. Every tittle. But as I may be prejudiced a little in favour of our Australian productions, you shall judge for yourself after dinner today in a dram of the company's best old aqua, which I've had 5 years in bottle. T. Most willingly. A. And you shall pledge me in the old colonial toast advance Australia. T. With all my heart. A. I would recommend you, moreover, to visit the premises. You will be able to spend an hour or two very agreeably, and I will give you a note to my friend Askew, the manager, who I am certain will pay you every attention. T. Many thanks, my good sir, I will accept your kind offer, but I am ashamed of the trouble I have given you. A. Not at all. I am only sorry that various matters prevent me showing you the attention I could wish. I never count it lost labour when I am able to apply my spare hours to showing strangers, especially Englishmen, the capabilities of my native country. For it is only by cultivating these friendly feelings on all occasions that the interests of this colony can be fostered in the old country, and the character of her inhabitants understood. T. It is curious that even at this day, the most contrary accounts respecting New South Wales are published in the public prints. A. Singular enough. I cannot see for what end. T. The only particular in which they agree is the fineness of the climate, to which I now also give my voice. As our immortal bard hath it, the air smells wooingly here, and sweetly and nimbly recommends itself unto our pleasant senses. He really describes it as if he himself had snuffed the pure atmosphere of Australia. A. Good. But his beautiful allusion to the sweet south will not answer this side of the world. The south wind blows here in the winter months with a cutting sharpness. T. Shakespeare dreamt not of the Antipodes. A. Even if he had, he would have found but little in his day and generation whereon to exercise his brilliant imagination. T. Tasman only discovered this continent the same year that Shakespeare was gathered to his fathers, Anno Domini, 1616. A. I wonder what he would have said of our aborigines, or blackfellow, as the English termed them long ago. T. Dark native of the far Antipodes, A. and the emu. T. Brother to Africa's white and lofty bird. A. But this Shakespearean colloquy has run away with the Australian distillery. T. Whiskey by any other name would smell as sweet. A. No more of that, Hal, and ye love me. T. I have done. A. You must not let them forget to show you their garden at the distillery. It is one of the finest in the colony. T. You are favoured with a wonderfully productive soil. A. Also forget not to look at what they call the old building. It was built by the original proprietor of the place, one or the earliest settlers here. It will give you some idea of the slim workmanship of the 19th century. T. Yes. We are fast progressing towards the Babylonish walls and massy Roman towers. Where do you find a market for your Australian aqua? A. In New Zealand and the other islands of Australasia. The demand far exceeds the supply. T. Why do you not build more distilleries? A. They are doing so. The Campbellton Joint Stock Company are just now erecting an immense range of buildings for the manufacture of the pure spirit. But it is nearly 3 o'clock, and I have to attend a meeting of the South Sea Oil Gas Company at that hour. You will excuse me. T. Surely. A. Then we shall see you at 5 precisely. T. I shall do myself the pleasure of waiting on you at that hour. A. Good morning. T. Adieu. Exeunt. To be continued.
Don't forget to subscribe and add the Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast to your favourites. Thank you for listening. Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast.